listening to The Realist Report. And now your host, John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Tuesday, May 21st, and this is a pre-recorded edition of the program. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to The Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications if you do not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for more details. All right, with that said, let me introduce our special guest this evening. Timothy Fitzpatrick from Fitzpatrick Informer is joining us. Timothy is a blogger and an activist who focuses on many of the topics we've covered here over the years, so I am looking forward to speaking with him this evening. Timothy, welcome to the program, sir. How are you this afternoon?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
Yeah, good, man. We've been trying to set this up for a couple weeks now, and it just so happens Adam Green apparently beat me to the punch because you were just on his program, and you know I've been a guest on his show. He's been a guest on my program, and you know he's doing a lot of really good work. So that was it. Kind of surprised me when I saw you on there. I was like, oh wow, I'm getting ready to interview him too. So cool. I'm glad that you were on his show because he's getting a lot of attention, a lot of views. He's become quite a popular YouTuber, and he's covering a lot of very important topics, a lot of very controversial topics, and I think he's doing so in a pretty respectable and professional way. So I always tip my hat to people that do this sort of work and do so professionally. And that's exactly how your website comes across to me anyways. So why don't you tell us about yourself? You know, can you kind of talk about when you set up your blog? And of course, you know, you can promote your blog or your, I know you have a YouTube channel, I believe, or a BitChute channel. So kind of talk about your website, your blog, and how you became interested in a lot of the topics that you know, we've all been talking about for a long time now.
I started the blog, I think it was in 2011. And, yeah, I have BitChute, FitzInfo. BitChute is my ID there. Also, recently I just signed up for Gab. I'm on Twitter as well, FitzInfo. But I was exposed to sort of conspiracies at quite a young age when I was in my teens. And that sort of got me started into just some general conspiracies. And then when I went into college later in my 20s, I came across the Protocols of Zion, the Learned Elders of Zion, and really kind of started connecting things a lot more than just the kind of seemingly, you know, conspiracies that were unrelated. So, yeah, and just from there, I just kept building and building, and here I am today.
Very interesting. I remember still to this day the first time I ever read the Protocols of Zion. I don't even know if I read the entire document, but I remember pulling it up as a PDF, and I got it from there was a guy named Daryl Bradford Smith. I'm not sure if you are familiar with his work or if that name rings a bell, but he had a website called imthewitness.com. Yeah. And I remember back in the day, this was back when I was, you know, first getting into this sort of stuff, and I remember pulling it up and reading it and just being so dumbfounded because I knew it was true. I mean, everything that they kind of talk about and highlight in that book or that document is exactly what's going on in the world today. And that was very, very clear. And it was kind of like startling because it was really kind of the first, I don't want to say anti-Jewish, but it basically like exposed like the international Jewish agenda right? And like kind of what they've been up to over the years. And I just recognized it as true right away. I mean, it made sense. It was clearly what was going on politically and even historically. So it was a very profound and startling thing to read, you know, especially when you're kind of new to this information. But I think it's important to sit down and read the protocols and see for yourself what they actually say. And, you know, of course, the mainstream and like the organized Jewish community would have us believe that the protocols are like this ridiculous anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, you know, this trope where, you know, it doesn't make any sense and, you know, it's nonsense and, you know, they don't want anybody to actually sit down and read it. And I think it's important to actually do that just to see for yourself what it actually says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a much talked about document, but little read, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. So very interesting. So you've been kind of into conspiracies and, writing about these things, making YouTube videos about these subjects for a number of years. And I'm looking here at your website. It's fitzinfo.wordpress.com. Fitzpatrick Informer is the name of it. And you have a subheading underneath it. It's Exposing the Judeo-Masonic Conspiracy. Can you kind of explain what you mean by that? What is the Judeo-Masonic Conspiracy exactly? How would you go about kind of unpacking that for somebody new to this info?
Well, I don't know who first coined the term Judeo-Masonic, but basically it was sort of the belief of some of the older church leaders in the Catholic Church. I believe that might have come up with that term. But the pioneers of kind of our movement kind of came up with that term to explain that the conspiracy is sort of headed by this kind of Jewish Masonic cabal at the very top. But of course, that wouldn't exclude other fraternal orders or secret societies or other nefarious groups. So, but they're basically the head of the snake. So my blog's been focused on kind of that theme for a while. Lately, for about the last year or so, I've been kind of getting into the Soviet angle of it. I've had some people call me shill and stuff and say, you know, I'm just trying to restart a Cold War of some kind. But when you actually look deeper into things, you know, with Bolshevism, for example, it's pretty obvious that it's a Jewish movement, or it was a Jewish movement, but that it hasn't ended. And that's sort of the theme I'm taking now, is this kind of perestroika deception angle where communism never really collapsed. The Soviets staged the collapse to lull the West to sleep in order to spread world Bolshevism and bring about a final world order headed by them.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had mentioned your show with Adam Green. There was a lot of comments, like, you know, questioning you about this angle. And I didn't listen to the entire discussion you had, but nothing you said struck me as like disinfo or something like that. Maybe I wouldn't explain it the way that you did, but I think, you know, you're on the right track anyways. I do think there is – well, I don't know exactly. I'd like to maybe hear you out because I haven't studied as closely as you have. But I do think you're right in the fact that, you know, Bolshevism itself was certainly a Jewish movement, no doubt about that. But, I mean, it didn't just end with the fall of the Soviet Union. I agree with you. Because if you look at a lot of the modern-day neoconservatives, I mean, they themselves were communists back in the day. So it's kind of like a political ideology that's sort of transformed to fit in with the times, you know. And we see, you know, as I said, like the neoconservatives, the people that are pushing these endless wars for Israel and the Middle East, they come directly from this sort of school of thought. And I definitely do want to get into that topic. Before we do, though, could you maybe sort of just like describe your basic political ideology? I'm just curious, like how influenced have you been by Catholicism? It sounds like you're kind of maybe sort of like a traditional Catholic or something like that. Could you kind of elaborate on your political ideology?
Sure. I was a traditional Catholic prior to converting to Eastern Orthodoxy. But the position regarding I guess the Judeo-Masonic conspiracy is pretty much the same within Orthodoxy and within the Catholic Church. So I do approach it from that perspective, that cosmology.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense. And I respect that. It seems like there's a lot of people kind of in the, you know, the more right-wing type alternative media that have embraced and adopted Eastern Orthodoxy. I was always raised Catholic. I still, I guess, sort of consider myself Catholic. I identify with that. I don't go to Mass every weekend, unfortunately, but I actually did go recently. And I think that there's a lot of positives to say about the Catholic Church, especially historically, the historic role that it played. But now it's now it's kind of a joke in my mind, at least like at the elite level.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been, I mean, the thing that stands out to me is that it's not only the Vatican that has been hijacked by this Judeo-Masonic cabal, but it's also Eastern Orthodoxy as well. And when I converted to Eastern Orthodoxy, I didn't really realize that. And then when I got into it deeper, I started to see, oh, the same thing's going on here. We have this Masonic subversion, this capitulation to Jewry. And of course, you know, with, you have Masons in the papacy, and you have Masons in the patriarchates of Eastern Orthodoxy too. I mean, Patriarch Kirill, the Patriarchate of Moscow, he is a KGB agent, you know, straight up, he's a KGB agent. So yeah, it's not a good position to be in right now, because, you know, we're subverted, but we have to just kind of stick with it and do the best we can with the church as fragmented and as subverted that it is. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Well, you know what? I wanted you to kind of talk a little bit about Masonry. Cause frankly, I've never really studied the subject in any great detail. I mean, I've always heard about it, you know, kind of researching conspiracies and hearing different, you know, people in the alternative media, I guess, talk about Masonry. But I myself, I mean, I really haven't studied it in too much detail. I'm curious, how would you kind of break it down or outline it for people, and in its role in this overall broader, you know, Jewish conspiracy?
Mm-hmm. It seems that Freemasonry is sort of a vehicle for the Jews to get Gentiles on board with their world plan, sort of a Judaism for Gentiles type of thing. But they've taken and borrowed terms from other religions and historical events, so that, you know, everything seems to be associated with them, and they seem to be at the heart of everything. They're trying to create that idea, I guess, that deceptive idea. But really, it's just this sort of secret society that was founded on principles of the Jewish Kabbalah, the sort of Gnosticism, and organize it into a system whereby it could blackmail leaders. Illuminism, it's called, blackmailing powerful people to get them to do what you want them to do. But yeah, more or less, it's just Judaism for Gentiles. And today there's low level Masons that really don't have an idea of what's really going on. They just kind of, they're rank and file Masons that don't know anything more than just going to the Masonic Lodge on the weekends, drinking beers and making social connections, social and business connections. But at the higher levels, there is subversive activity going on. They were involved in both the French and Russian revolutions, which brought down the Catholic Church in France and the Russian Orthodox Church in Russia. So their role in that was huge. And of course, they were doing that alongside with world Jewry as well. So we call it Judeo-Masonic.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I mean, it seems, at least historically, Masonry was not always this totally corrupted, you know, subverted institution. It was, I don't know this for sure, but from what I've heard anyways, like sort of like a legitimate fraternal order that would pass along certain knowledge or certain skills and trades, right? That's kind of originally how it was founded, correct?
Yeah,
and I'm talking like hundreds of years ago, by the way.
It's hard to know with the Masons because they're like the Jewish Talmud. Masons are ordered to mislead people about what they're really about. So it's hard to know what's what with them. But yeah, they do often come up with a theory that, you know, we were just this, you know, this we were basically like the Masons who passed on secrets of trade. Yeah.
Right. What are some good sources on Masonry, maybe the history of Masonry, how it's been corrupted and subverted to advance, you know, this New World Order agenda, which of course is world Bolshevism or like this international Jewish conspiracy. I think that's, in my mind, that's really what the heart of the matter is all about. It's really a Jewish, I don't even know if necessarily conspiracy is the right word. I mean, I think that there are certain conspiracies, but it's more of just an open agenda. I mean, certainly at this point, they make, you know, they're not trying to hide what they're doing anymore.
Yeah.
What are some good sources about on Masonry that you've maybe read over the years or that you'd recommend?
One of the best ones would be Grand Orient Freemasonry Unmasked. And that was by Monsignor George F. Dillon and the Catholic Father Dennis Fahey. Actually, Dennis Fahey has quite a number of works exposing Masonry, world Jewry, and even the Soviet Union. So he's a really good source on that. People should just be careful because there's a lot of sort of limited hangout Masonic sources, limited hangout books that claim to be exposing Masonry, but really it's just some misdirection. But yeah, there's a number of works. Let me just think off the top of my head. I know Tex Mars has done quite a number of books on Freemasonry and Judaism. But yeah, I think the Grand Orient Freemasonry en masse is probably the top one I would recommend.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to get more into this topic at some point. It's probably one of the final topics, I guess, to really explore in detail. I've pretty much researched everything else, at least every other topic that I've been interested in, with the exception of Masonry. So anyways, that's very interesting. I think it's obviously an important angle to what's going on if you really want to understand certainly what's going on from a historical perspective, because I think you're absolutely right that Masonry played a huge role in the French Revolution and even in the Russian Revolution. And, you know, I think it's something certainly that is worth considering and worth looking into. I wanted to kind of move on and really kind of focus on this idea of world Bolshevism or world communism and how it's kind of transformed or been disguised almost after the fall of the Soviet Union, because I think that there is something legitimate going on with this angle to what we see playing out today. Do you want to kind of give us your take? How would you explain it to people?
Yeah, well, this subject is sort of new to me. Like I said earlier, I've had only been researching it intensely for about a year, maybe a year and a half. So it's not like with Judaism and Freemasonry, I had been studying for you know, a long, long time. But from what I've gathered so far, like I mentioned earlier, it seems that the perestroika deception, which Soviet defector Anatoly Golitsyn penned, in addition to new lies for old, he was a defector who was debriefed by the CIA, and he defected to the U.S. And he basically the perestroika deception is basically his memoranda to the CIA, warning them that, hey, communism didn't really fall. It was an illusion to lull the West to sleep so that the Soviets could maneuver and bring about their world revolution, world communism, as Lenin had said. So to do this, they had to infiltrate the West, get traitors in the West on board with this. And that seems to sort of have happened during the 1940s. Charlotte Iserbe, she's documented a lot of this. She was an educational advisor to the Reagan administration, and that's when she really woke up, it seems. She saw that the Reagan administration was working hand in hand with the Soviets, bringing in the Sovietized Marxist education into the schools. It's supposed to be a Republican government, right? But yeah, she said that it sort of started happening in the 40s, and then from the work that I've done and some of the works of people like Michael Collins Piper, who sort of documented the Trotskyite takeover of the anti-communist movement with the McCarthy era onwards, shows that, you know, the anti-communist movement was really being gatekept by these groups. What was this one group? It was like the Jewish Anti-Communist League of America. I can't remember the exact name. It was in one of Michael Collins Piper's books. But yeah, they were gatekeeping it. So it seems that they were almost misdirecting guys like Senator Joseph McCarthy and other anti-communists so that they were sort of rendered ineffective, because obviously, you know, the anti-communist movement in America didn't really stop it. Now we see full-blown communist infiltration of especially the State Department, but the United States government, and now we see it in the West everywhere, where Western governments are on board with the whole Marxist takeover, and even though they might seemingly appear to be opposed to Russia. So,
yeah. No, yeah, that's I hear you. I think those are all good points. You know, I remember reading a book called Stalin's Secret Agents, which is a very mainstream book. You could rent it from any, you know, public library, I'm sure. And if they don't have it, you could probably get it through like the, you know, the inner library loan or whatever. You can buy it from Amazon. I'm trying to think of the name of the guys who wrote it. I could probably look it up here in a second. One of the guys that wrote it was actually Jewish. One of them was a Jew. The other one I think was a Gentile. But I mean, they thoroughly expose, using official FBI documents even, how thoroughly infiltrated and subverted and just totally taken over many departments, many institutions within the United States federal government were, going back to the, you know, really during World War II, but even before then, the FDR administration. You know, the State Department was totally taken over by outright communist agents, people mm-hmm. that were working directly for the Soviet Union. Whitaker Chambers, I believe, was one of them. It's been a while since I've really thought about this. I wrote pretty extensively about it when I first came across this information, and I'm just failing to remember some of the names off the top of my head. But it was a whole list of people in the State Department, in the War Department, I mean, all throughout the federal government that were basically communist agents and certainly communist sympathizers. And this was kept secret, kept, you know, hush hush for years. And it finally came out with FOIA requests and official documentation from the government, where the FBI was like checking these people out and discovering that they were directly connected to the Soviet Union.
Yeah, exactly. And then you had gatekeepers like John Edgar Hoover, you know, blackmailed by the Jewish Lansky Crime Syndicate, acting as the so-called conservative, anti-communist, anti-homosexual. And here he is, a homosexual, and seemingly helping the communists himself. So.
Yeah, that's right, man. They really did have agents everywhere to protect them. And what I think when I say you're on the right track with this is because you see this continuum carry over into the 1990s and the 2000s, and you really see it with what happened on 9/11. A lot of the top neoconservatives were, you know, directly from this sort of school of thought. They're like modern day Bolsheviks, disguised as American patriots and, you know, neoconservatives that want to, you know, make America the greatest military superpower or whatever. That's kind of the way they portrayed themselves. But these were the people that were planning 9/11. These were the people that were writing public policy documents specifically saying, look, we need a new Pearl Harbor in order to justify the global war on terrorism and to kickstart all these wars in the Middle East that will basically advance Israel's interests in the region using American military and financial might.
Yeah, and something that I've sort of come to the conclusion recently about is that it seems that the whole purpose of the creation of the State of Israel had several meanings to it. One was obviously that the Jews want their – well, at least for elite Jews, they have to have the – the window dressing of a state of Israel, even because a lot of them are not even religious. They don't care about, you know, this Jewish people being the people of God. But at least for the rank and file Jews, that was that sort of needed to happen to give them some cohesion. And then, of course, the Masons have some prophecy embedded in that as well, where Jerusalem is to be the world capital. But I think on a political level, you had to kind of sum it up. It seems like the Soviets created Israel in tandem with Britain and the U.S., but they were sort of, it looks like they were leading it, because the Balfour Declaration now was, it wasn't, it didn't seem to, from what I've read, it didn't seem to be a binding agreement or a binding document, but it was published in the press the same week as the October Revolution. I think maybe 2 days after the October Revolution. But the goal was to basically frame the West with, well, back then it would be, they knew that it was going to be this criminal Zionist state, but is to frame the West for all of Israel's crimes and then to turn the world against the West. And then, as Jack Bernstein has explained in his book, The Life of an American Jew in Racist Marxist Israel, it was to the Soviets and created Israel to divide and conquer the Middle East, sort of like the Odid Yunnan plan had outlined. And that would have the effect of also displacing a lot of these Arabs and Muslims, who would then later be used to as part of the Kalergi plan, which we're now experiencing, where we're displacing the white Christian populations of the West. So you have multiple things going on with it, but I think the primary ones were to discredit the West by saying, to frame it for all of Israel's crimes, because now the Operation SIG is a thing I mentioned on Adam Green's show, which was this General Pasepa. He was a Romanian Soviet general, revealed this Operation SIG, where they would, the Soviets would foment anti-Zionism among the Arab world to sort of polarize the Arabs against the Israelis and polarize them against the West, and basically show that the West was really behind this Zionist power, the West and Britain specifically. I actually did a article on this on my blog. What was it called now? I show this flyer that had been dropped. This was like within the last few years, but the Russian fighter planes, I believe, were dropping these pamphlets in, it might have been in Syria, and it showed like a ISIS fighter with a wind-up key behind him being wound up by Israel, and then America was depicted in there as well. So again, this that Operation SIG narrative of the West and Israel are behind all the evils in the world. They're behind, you know, the destabilization of the Middle East, when really it's the Soviets that are manipulating the whole thing, with American and British cooperation, of course, but at a lower level.
Now, when you say Soviet, you mean like back when the Soviet Union was still in existence, or like still today? I guess that is actually one thing that I was a little bit confused about with kind of what you're explaining on Adam Green's show. I mean, the Soviet Union officially collapsed, what, in like the early 90s, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I say Soviet, I mean just this ongoing, I mean, the name collapsed, but there's still Soviets at heart, of course. So when I say Soviets, I mean now and, you know, continuing on. But yeah, Operation SIG was, I think, was officially back in the 70s, according to General Pasepa. He was another Soviet defector. I mean, most of the stuff we have, like, there's such goldmine information from these Soviet. I mean, there's a lot of fake defectors, but some of them seem to be genuine, like Anatoly Golitsyn, General Pasepa, Yan Sezhna, I think his name is pronounced. He was provided for Joseph Douglas's Red Cocaine book, which I'm very fond of. This Operation SIG again is just about, it's, I mean, guys like Christopher Berlin have been telling us about the Yunnan plan and how, you know, the Israelis have been carrying out this divide and conquer balkanization of the Middle East, which is probably true at some level, but it seems that it was actually masterminded by the Kremlin because.
Oh, huh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I am familiar with Golitsyn for sure. He's the one that, I mean, you can find like his speeches on YouTube, where he talks about, you know, how basically Soviet subversive tactics that they were using over the years to undermine the West. And what he's describing in my mind is basically Jewish cultural Marxism, this Jewish critique of Western civilization and the systematic and deliberate undermining of everything we believe and everything we stand for. Mm-hmm. That's really kind of what he's describing. So, I mean, I agree with that, but I guess, is that kind of where you're getting at?
Yeah, I think the person you're referring to is actually Yuri Bezmenov, because I don't think Galitzin ever did any audio.
No, I'm sorry. You're right. It is Yuri Bezmenov. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's very good, too, although he didn't I don't believe he actually he kind of says it indirectly that the Soviets are still in existence. But I think those videos are from the 80s anyway, so that might not have mattered. Because communism didn't allegedly fall till what, 91 or 90. So, yeah. But, yeah, his work is very good, too, for sure. Yeah, Bezmenov. Yeah, and that's the other thing with this, you know, with people in on the right who buy into this, who bought into the lie that, you know, communism collapsed. Russia's now this national Christian, you know, nation fighting the New World Order. How do they explain the continuity between what Lenin said they would do, bringing cultural Marxism through the education system into America, and where we are today? Like, do they think this social justice radical leftism just evolved on its own? Like, how can they explain that? There's obvious continuity there.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that they pretty much had America totally subverted going back to World War II. So we're like three or four generations into this. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily still being directed by "quote unquote" Soviets or however you want to term it, but I mean, I think they were pretty successful in getting their foothold in our country and certainly taking over and not necessarily taking over key positions of power. Although that did happen, there were like outright Soviet agents in key positions of power in the U.S. federal government going back to the FDR administration. But really, like, throughout the institutions, even the lower-level people, a lot of them were communist sympathizers and or outright Soviet agents. So, I mean, it was totally subverted going back generations ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. But, I mean, just to give you an example that is still going on today, we have – I know, like, a lot of people on the right don't like to pay attention to any media, mainstream media, but – there is some truth in what they say. They have to put some truth out because, you know, it would be too obvious that they were lying. But some of the truths that they do put out, you can find where, you know, the Kremlin has got these Russian online trolls and they're supporting the Black Panthers while supporting the white supremacists simultaneously. So they're, obviously their game is more of this divide and conquer polarization. And I think that's exactly why they helped Trump get elected, was to kind of fuel that whole divide and conquer strategy.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, no, I understand. I guess that's a valid point. I just don't know how influential or effective, they've been. I mean, you know, I wouldn't doubt that they're trying to not necessarily destabilize America, but keep everybody fighting. And so there's no coherent strategy. That's certainly something, you know, pretty much any country tries to do. But, you know, one thing that's interesting is, especially with, I'm sorry, what was in, oh, Yuri Bezmenov. That's the gentleman you can find on YouTube still, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember I was really interested in his speeches, and in his work, when I was first kind of discovering a lot of this information. And I remember I studied, Eastern European politics actually pretty extensively in college. And, I mean, even back then, we were reading, like, you know, mainstream college history books about the period, about Eastern Europe in general. And even in those books, it was basically saying that the fall of communism was a sham, in that all of the main communist leaders who were, you know, like, running the government while the Soviet Union was still in existence and while all these other Eastern European countries were still under, you know, outright communist leadership. Once that all collapsed, these same people were still in charge. They just called it democracy and they changed the name of their political party. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it really was a continuation of pretty much the same people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm working on an article. It's probably not going to be too in depth, but a lot of the deception going on in the right and the Western and people of the West who are conservatives is that they think that Russia and the Eastern Bloc are conservative. They're nationalist. B, that they're turning to Christianity and they're becoming more Christian, whether it's Catholic or Orthodox, depending on the nation. And C, that they are anti-LGBT. And my answer to that is that, D, they are anti-immigration as well. So they're basically saying no to the clergy plan. And they're getting away with it. I mean, some of these East Bloc countries are members of the EU. How can they do that? How can they get away with that? When the EU, as you know, they don't let anybody get away with anything there, but they are getting away with it. So something's missing from this equation. And it's very simple. If you go back and look at the policies of Russia and the East Bloc under communism, under official communism, they were anti-immigration then. They had to be nationalists in a way to maintain stability within the bloc. Because again, remember, strategically, if you're trying to conquer the world and take over with communism, you need to keep your people, your stable, the East Bloc, you need to keep it stable and you need to have unity. And to maintain unity, you need to keep it nationalist, even though you don't maybe believe in it as a long-term ideology. But temporarily, you need to have it nationalist. And you also need to keep it free of a lot of this overt sexual immorality, which would include, you know, the LGBT movement. So these policies that Russia and the East Bloc have today are the same as they were under the Soviet Union. So they are not different. They have not changed in that sense. So Westerners need to realize that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, seems pretty clear. Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly no expert, but it does seem that, you know, the leadership we see in a lot of Eastern European countries, like Poland, for example, or Hungary, or even Russia with Putin. I mean, I'm no expert on Putin, but he's, to me, I mean, these the leaders of these countries and the way they interact with the world, some of the things that they say and do, to me, they strike me as much more independent and much more nationalistic and trying to put their own countries first than certainly what we see in the West. Let's maybe start with Putin. What do you have to say about this man? Because I know there's, you know, people love him or hate him. It seems like I'm frankly indifferent. I mean, he says a lot of good things. He seems to be doing a lot of decent things. And then at the same time, you can still see him meeting with all the Chabad, you know, rabbis, you know, once a year, whatever it is. And, you know, he's got all these Jewish connections, very similar to Trump. Although I think Trump at this point is, you know, kind of proven to be a total sellout. And I would like to talk about Trump as well, but give us your take on Putin first.
Sure. He's KGB, and there's a saying that once KGB, always KGB. And I guess the same could be applied for the CIA, I guess. Alexander Litvinenko was another defector whom I believe was legitimate. He was murdered, I think it was in 2006. I think it
was the
within,
guy that was poisoned in London?
Yeah, I think it was in London with polonium, I think.
Yep, I remember.
Yeah, and he, I think it was weeks before his death or his murder, he said that Putin was a pederast, that he likes little boys, and that the KGB had video of him engaging in some acts, apparently. So the Soviets, they tend to work on compromise, which is how they get basically the Soviet compromat is a continuation of the Bavarian Illuminati's Illuminism, which was this sexual blackmail. They kind of pioneered it. So we see the continuity from, you know, Weishaupt's Illuminati and the Freemasons today. So they're still using that same system to blackmail people into doing what they want. So Putin isn't really the head of the snake, he's just another puppet, another controlled, compromised puppet for this world order that they're trying to institute here. So yeah, I believe that Litvinenko is correct about that. That makes sense. I mean, he didn't really have a reason to make that up. And that would explain a lot of things. And then there was this video of Putin kissing this little boy on the stomach in, I think it was in Red Square, just very odd behavior. There's video of that. So now he has been basically furthering the perestroika deception, furthering the Leninist agenda of attacking and destabilizing the West. I mean, there's so much to say about him, where to begin, you know. I think some of the memes going out there in the West amongst conservatives is that he kicked out all the oligarchs, therefore he's anti-oligarch, he's anti-Jew somehow. But if you actually go and do the research, he kicked out some oligarchs, but there's so many oligarchs still in Russia. So, I mean, he kicked out a fraction of them, and for reasons other than the fact that they were Jewish or that, you know, some kind of ideology he apparently has. It was all to do with they were getting in the way somehow, so he kicked a few of them out. And then there's another meme that, you know, the Rothschild, and if you do the research, you can find out this meme that that Russia kicked the Rothschilds out of Russia. It goes back to these Russian troll farms. There's actually no source on this at all. But if you actually do if you actually look up Rothschild's companies, holdings, they have operations in Moscow. The restructuring Russian CIS corporate debt, I believe it was. I put out a great meme of this a while ago. Where was? Oh yeah, Russia's central bank is a member of the Rothschild Bank of International Settlements, the BIS. Rothschild Global Advisory is based in Moscow. And yeah, like I said, the Rothschild Group is restructuring $15 billion in Russian CIS corporate debt. So there's another meme that's out the window. Another one would be that he's restoring the Christian faith. I mentioned earlier that the Moscow Patriarchate, the Patriarchates in Orthodoxy are sort of like mini popes to their jurisdictions. So they're structured differently than the Vatican. They don't just have one pope. But the Moscow Patriarchate or the mini pope would be Patriarch Kirill, and as I mentioned earlier, he is a KGB, or he was quote unquote a KGB operative under the Soviet Union. I believe he still is KGB because, of course, the KGB just changed their name to what was it, FSB. And also in Russia they do have a lot of attendees of the Russian Orthodox Church, but a lot of them, there was a poll that came out recently, I saw it in the Moscow Times, it was like half or even less than half of church attending people in Russia don't even really believe in the religion. Like, it's just sort of something you do, like going to a baseball game in America. You go to the baseball game, that's what Americans do. Well, in Russia you go to the church, and a lot of them don't even go every Sunday, they just go on the high holidays, you know, Easter, Christmas. So there's a lot of disinformation that needs to be dispelled with the West's perception of Putin and Russia and the East Bloc.
Right. Okay. I remember reading an article. It was actually published, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have it right here in front of me, but I believe it was published by Haaretz, which is an Israeli, like mainstream Israeli news outlet. And it was talking about how Russia had a huge number of drug addicts and alcoholics, and you know they had all sorts of serious problems. And I think what it was a photographer who had taken like photos all throughout Russia, like kind of documenting this. Do you recall that article? It was published, I don't know if it was this year, maybe last year. It was relatively recently.
No, I don't think I saw
that. But it's like a side of Russia that you don't really hear about often, right? Let me see if I can find it really quick. I don't know if you have any comments on that. Like, because, you know, a lot of times people do, you know, certainly like a lot of people in the right wing think of Russia as this sort of traditionalist, Christian, nationalist type country. And I'm not saying that it's not. I don't know. I've never even been there. I don't follow it nearly as closely as you probably or many other people. But, you know, there's like another side to it, it seems like, that isn't getting much attention anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess in Russia, there's sort of a balancing act that the Soviets have had to deal with initially when the revolution happened in 1917, 1918. They had to destabilize Russia first, but then once they gained power, they sort of had to bring some stability to it in order to keep this, you know, communist dream going. But they do have to maintain a bit of destabilization in order to keep the people in check too. So I think a lot of this alcoholism that you see is a result of that, and drugs, of course, but I think more the alcohol. I think it was, I was listening to an old Daryl Bradford Smith? Yeah. I think I was listening to an old audio of his with a Muslim fellow, and it was talking about how they, the Putin regime had to lower the price of alcohol. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, that makes sense. If you want to lower the price of alcohol, more people are going to buy it, presumably, and more people are going to abuse it. So yeah, I think there's a balancing act where they can't have too much. They have to have some stability, but they can't have the people getting too healthy, getting too Christian. So there's a balancing act there. Let's keep them a little bit, you know, drunk, but not too drunk that the whole country just goes to hell in a handbasket.
Right. Well, and you know what? It's pretty much the same thing in any other country you go to. You'll find very similar problems. By the way, I did find the article that I was referring to. I'll send you a link on Skype here in just a minute.
Sure.
The headline is, "This photographer exposes Russia's darkest sides. The work of Dmitry Markov documents the lives of the homeless, neglected children, and alcoholics in remote parts of the country." And goes on. You could check it out. I remember reading it originally, and this was from November of last year, and thinking, oh wow, this is interesting. I wonder what you know, everybody that's praising Putin would have to say about this. But again, I mean, this is the sorts of problems and issues that this article talks about is extremely common in America, no doubt. And I'm sure it's extremely common in pretty much any other Western country. So it's not really that surprising to me.
Yeah.
So anyways, I guess, so really, what would you say, like, what really did happen when the Soviet Union collapsed? I mean, it was basically just a change of scenery? I mean, was it like just really, like, truly, like, just a PR deception?
I think it had to do with the strategy was changing to polarize the West and the world, and that's where we kind of are today. Because if you look at 91, that, what was that? That was the gay agenda really started ramping up in the West. You had immigration was really ramping up. So I think they were smart enough to see that they had to change their strategy, to deal more with just active measures abroad. I mean, cause you know, the bloc and Russia had already been pretty much dominated. There was nothing more they could really need to do there. And that's when we saw the buildup of the anti-Zionist movement, the Middle East conflict. We had Iran-Contra, which the KGB was heavily involved in that, I believe. And there's so many conspiracies that have happened since the 90s. You know, September 11th, I believe the Russians were involved in that, although I'm only just starting to explore that research, so I can't really say too much because I don't really know for sure.
The Russians involved with it.
Yeah, I'm not sure at what level, but it seems to be.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. I remember there was actually I don't know if he was Russian or he was from a country that was part of the old Soviet Union. Dmitry Kalzov, I think, was his name. I could be wrong about that, but I remember there was a guy who made a lot of very interesting allegations about 9/11, kind of tying in the Russians. And I found it interesting, certainly worth looking into. Although, at the end of the day, I don't think any of it can be truly substantiated. But I can tell you for sure that there's all sorts of very legitimate and solid documentation and evidence linking Israel and other Jewish criminals that have direct ties to Israel to what happened on 9/11. You know, the people that planned it, the people that, you know, covered it up and sort of institutionalized the official mainstream conspiracy theory explaining what happened. And certainly the people that benefited. I mean, their entire agenda that they, again, I mentioned this earlier, they're like writing, you know, public policy papers explaining what they wanted to do, talking about they needed a new Pearl Harbor, talking about how they wanted to, you know, balkanize the Middle East and invade this country, this country, this country. You know, I could list off like 10 countries that they openly talked about overthrowing. So I don't know. I don't know what the Russia connection is. I'd be interested in hearing it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I say, it's sort of a new subject for me. I'm not too well. I'm not knowledgeable about it yet. Joseph Davies. He did an article or two on it, which I just have to read up a little bit more. But one of the things that tells me that they were involved. I mean, we have some of the alleged hijackers being trained in Chechnya, which is sort of a Russian proving ground for terrorists. Of course, Russia was the basically invented modern terrorism. Yes, don't get me wrong. I definitely believe Israel was involved in 9/11 as well as other, you know, false flags for sure. But I think that their involvement is just a little too convenient. And that's one of the things that tells me that Israel is subservient to Russia or the Soviet system, not just Russia necessarily, but it's because they're allowed to, like, we have this information. It's well known about Israel 9/11, even Israel and the JFK assassination to some degree. But so it's almost like for the small minority of people that we are who knows Israel is involved, it's like we are given these little breadcrumbs and they're sort of gatekeeping. Well, you can go this far, but you can't come this far. Russia can't be implicated at all. So, but I think Russia and Israel were definitely involved in 9/11.
Huh, very interesting. Well, if you do any more research and put together an article or want to talk about it at some point, I'd love to hear you out because that is pretty interesting. And I'm like a total 9/11 nerd. So maybe we can do a show on that in the future once you've kind of thought about it more and done some more research.
Yeah, for sure. Just one thing I will mention, I remember reading from Joseph Davis's article, was that there was a counterintelligence, a high-ranking, I think it was FBI counterintelligence specialist. And this happened, I think it was months or weeks before 9/11, who was outed as a Soviet mole. I guess it wouldn't be Soviet, but a Russian mole working in the FBI. And of course, after 9/11 happened, that overshadowed any, you know, media attention to it. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Huh, yeah, but yeah,
there's a few more things, but yeah, I'll let you know when I am more well read on that.
Yeah, and you know what, if you could maybe even send me a link to the piece that you're referring to, because I'd like to read it myself.
Sure.
Yeah, to kind of wrap up here, we only got about 10 minutes left or so. I wanted to talk about Trump and get your take on Trump. I was looking at your website. I know you've written quite a bit about it. You know, how he's basically controlled by Mossad and, you know, he's pretty much a puppet. And it, you know what, for the longest time, I mean, when he first announced his candidacy, I took him at his word. He was saying all the right things. He's very inspirational in my mind. And you know, I was trying to be rational about it, but you know, it's and I think by being rational about it, you have to come to the conclusion that this guy is just basically a sellout. He's not really following through on anything that he said he was going to do, which is very disappointing. But I guess it shouldn't really surprise anybody. But you have a series of articles on your website about how he is controlled by Mossad. So do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, it's a 5-part series. I'm working on part 6. It'll be my last part because I don't think anything really needs to be said about it more, because I mean, I've just been putting so much time into it. I'm just getting sick of it. But yeah, the first five deal with they basically deal with Trump being compromised sexually. That's part one, and a lot of his connections to the Iran-Contra players, Khashoggi, basically all those old Trotskyite neocons that were in the Reagan administration. He's just all in debt with those guys. Roger Stone, they're all tied to, like, Roger Stone's mentor was this Jew named Murray Chotiner, who worked for, I think it was Nixon. Of course, Stone's a big Nixon fan.
So I'm sorry, real quick, just to interrupt, just so it is more clear to me, like, these are the types of people that Trump is basically controlled by, you're saying. These are the types of people that were essentially their ideological ties go back to this Soviet, you know, Bolshevik mindset, correct? Is that kind of the argument?
Well, maybe not ideologically, but that network anyways, that the whole Iran-Contra network. Yeah.
Goes back to the Bolshevik criminals, the people that were running the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
This world, you know, conspiracy, basically. Yeah. Okay. No, that like to me, that makes sense. I mean, that absolutely makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Adnan Khashoggi, he's dead now, but he was the central conspirator in the Iran-Contra affair, and pretty much every conspiracy since the 1980s. There was two Mossad agents that confirmed that Khashoggi was working. He was at least an asset of the Mossad, like the Saudi billionaire, right? A Saudi was working for the Mossad. It was Viktor Ostrovsky confirmed, and two others in Every Spy a Prince, the authors of that book. But yeah, and of course, Khashoggi sold Trump his yacht. I mean, this is just a connection, right? But people go, well, so what? I mean, the rich hang out with the rich. Yes, that's true. But when there's all these other connections, it starts to create this idea of what's really going on here. But one of the bigger ones is Robert Maxwell. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he was that.
Yeah, he was a British. Well, was he Jewish?
Yeah. He was a
British,
a Jew from,
like,
the Soviet bloc.
Spy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it came out after that he was working for both the Mossad and the KGB. And my theory is that KGB and the Mossad are one entity, but that's another. We'll save that for another time, maybe. But yeah, he was working for Mossad and KGB, selling this promise software, wheeling and dealing. He was just, you know, living this high life, living in yachts and all kinds of stuff. But he was associated with Trump. Trump was on his boat at least once. And John Tower, who was involved in the whole Iran-Contra scandal, there's a picture of Maxwell Trump and Tower together. And the other interesting thing is that ties back to part one of my series is that Robert Maxwell's daughter, Ghislaine, she was the procurer of children for the Jeffrey Epstein pedophile case. So she was bringing him. So her dad's a Mossad KGB agent, and here she is bringing these young girls, or who knows, maybe they're boys too, to Jeffrey Epstein's associates for them to, you know. But it's interesting that the witnesses in the Jeffrey Epstein cases, I should say, plural, said that the sexual encounters between these children and these friends of Epstein or these dignitaries, they were bugged with, I don't know if it was cameras or audio or both. So for whom were they bugging these?
That's the blackmail right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, so that's definitely, that seems to be like a running theme through all of this, is how politics at the highest level, how it really works is these people are compromised. I mean, really, if you think about it, that's what a lot of this boils down to is, and who knows how exactly they're compromised. It could be any number of ways. I mean, some people allege they're pedophiles or homosexuals or just sexual deviants in general. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised by any of the above, but that seems to be how these people are so easily manipulated, including possibly even President Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems that Ghislaine, in my estimation, Ghislaine was was an agent bugging the encounters, and they probably, although we don't have the proof, but it stands to reason that they would have blackmailed Trump had he been involved in it. And of course, there's been, you know, lawsuits that said he is. Of the right kind of has dismissed it, saying, oh, you know, that's just a smear campaign. But if it is true, what does that tell us? What's going, what does that mean? So I think that Ghislaine was probably, like her father, working for both the KGB and Mossad. And the Kremlin probably has whatever bugged encounter that went on with Epstein and his associates and Trump, maybe. And that's how they were able to manipulate him into, you know, being president and being a, basically being a cuck for Israel and Russia.
He definitely for Israel, for sure. There's no doubt about that. And him and every single person in his administration are proud about that. That's what's so sad, mm-hmm. is, you know, our politicians in America are just such total cucks, as you said. It's probably the same. I mean, you said you're in Canada. It's probably similar in Canada, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, we got our government's totally, I mean, it's just totally sold out. Communists right to the bone.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much the same thing here. It's a total joke, a total disgrace. And yeah, it's sad, man. It's a really, really tough spot to be in politically.
Yeah. And you know, you have, just to show you the success of these KGB Mossad active measures, you have the left who hates the West, but they think they are the West, but they're not. They're counter West. And then you have Western conservatives who hate the West and embrace Russia. So both sides have turned on the West, if you think about it, right? It's exactly what they the Soviets want.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Timothy, we are just about out of time, man. Thank you very much for joining me. This is a very interesting conversation. And
yeah, great.
We should
thanks
yeah
for
we should
me.
Plan on doing it. Yeah, we should plan on doing it again, and maybe get into the Russia 9/11 angle. I think that'd be a really interesting conversation to have.
That would be excellent. Yeah, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, cool, man. Well, I will be in touch. And once again, your blog is fitzinfo.wordpress.com. And what's your Twitter handle again? It's at
fitzinfo, FITZINFO.
Very good. Okay, cool. I'll have links to that when I post this program. And thanks a lot, man. It was good. Good to meet you. Good to chat with you. And let's do this again.
Likewise, John.
Okay. Take care, man.
You too.